Welcome to the Zinnov Podcast. You're listening to our Business Resilience series, where we bring to you conversations between eminent industry stalwarts and thought leaders from across the globe as they discuss their insights on overcoming challenges and the mindset that helped them navigate the journey of crisis, resilience, and growth.
Michelle Obama once said, "There is no limit to what we as women can accomplish." And the rise of powerful women leaders across industries just proves how far we've come. Have you ever wondered what it takes to be a successful woman leader? Is it mindset? Is it support systems? Or just plain perseverance? Join me, Nitika Goel, CMO of Zinnov, as I take you through an incredible retrospective from the latest podcast series from the Zinnov stable, Women in the Middle. This thought-provoking podcast delves into hard-won wisdom of accomplished women leaders, exploring their journeys through work, family, and life. In our premiere episode, I'm thrilled to chat with three powerhouse women leaders, Shalini Sankarshna from PlanView, Snigdha Ghoshre from Diebold Nixdorf, or Indrila Majumdar from TIAA. They each bring unique experiences from the worlds of business and technology. Get ready to unpack career-defining moments, mistakes that became springboards, the secrets to their relentless drive, the power of supportive relationships, and why attitude and learnability trumps all. We'll explore inspiring stories and invaluable perspectives we hope will equip women everywhere to shatter those glass ceilings. Let's dive right in. First up, we have Shalini Sankarshna, the Managing Director of PlanView India. For those of you who may not be familiar, PlanView is a private equity-owned B2B SaaS company enabling enterprise-wide transformations. In her role, Shalini currently serves over 4,500 customers globally. Our conversations with Shalini meandered through her journey from becoming an engineer in the BFSI sector to landing in enterprise software, exploring whether her career path was a result of intention or just serendipity.
I'm a pretty boring person that way, not that interesting, but yeah, happy to share. Listen, I mean, a typical South Indian Kannada girl, born, raised, educated in Bangalore, always good in studies. I think we all grew up like that. For us, education was like the number one priority in all our lives. Never struggled with studies, so that was always a boon. I had a lot of fascination and love for music, but never pursued it. Again, a typical South Indian thing, I hate to say that, but we were all so much about getting into studies, figure out that, get into a good job, and then you can do all of the other things, right? So pretty much went into that mode. Engineering was a chance in the sense I had a chance of getting into both engineering and medicine. But life happened, things happened at home that I could not pursue this 10-year long journey that you need to do for medicine. So I said, okay, let me start in engineering. So engineering was not probably the first choice, but ended up to be a really good choice. And took up electronics and communications because somehow at that point, I was not still bought into the whole software tag, if you can believe it. Now I'm only talking digital. So I really wanted to still be close with communications and networking. Then the job bug hit all of us. So I was recruited for Wilco, the erstwhile ADP. So Wilco International was based in Hyderabad, probably one of the very first companies to bring in offshore financial services. So that's how I became part of Wilco. And I had no idea what is financial services. And my first training, we were taught what is QSIP. And I'm like, oh my God, what did I study all this for? What is QSIP? What is security instruments? But like I said, I was a good student that always helped, which means any new subject thrown at me always would end up being one of those sincere, committed, go study, do your syllabus, do your assignments. That was the kind of person I was always. Very little I knew that I will be more in the front of the action rather than the back. I was always comfortable being in the back of the room. But I think over the years, Wilco, as the organization transformed, as we grew up, as we scaled down, as we again grew back up, it was phenomenal learning for me. Honestly, I mean, I could never stop thanking all the experiences I've had. But very early on, I moved closer to business, closer to product, closer to functional domain. One of the very early product managers in India, and started beginning the journey of business analysis, then transformed to product management, then kept on moving towards that path. Probably done most of the jobs available that is customer facing. And had assignments overseas, worked with a lot of customers. Back home, worked with a lot of teams. The heart of product organizations continue to be product teams, you know. How much ever you put them through sales and revenue, it's really the product teams which make or break the organization. And I was fortunate to be part of some of the best teams. I think that's been the journey, Nikita.
Shalini's journey is reminiscent of a portfolio career, where growth often means embracing change and uncertainty. By staying open to new opportunities, Shalini has organically steered her career into promising new directions, challenging the conventional notion of stability. Changing lanes appears to be a common theme amongst the women leaders I had the pleasure of speaking with. Snigdha Ray from Diebold didn't get caught up in the quagmire of why, but instead focused on the next problem that she could volunteer to solve. Perhaps this fearless mindset is one key to her incredible success? My next guest, Snigdha Ghosh Ray, is the VP of Payments and India Software Hub at Diebold Nixdorf, a provider of software, hardware, and information technology services for financial institutions and retailers. Snigdha has over 25 years of experience in building and launching cutting-edge global products at companies like ADP and PayPal before her work at Diebold. But when it comes to challenging the status quo, Snigdha truly walks the talk. 17 years into her career, she made the bold decision to pursue her MBA at the prestigious Indian School of Business. So I had to ask Snigdha, what toll did juggling her MBA, her job, and her family take? What made this decision worth the hard she took on?
I graduated out of Bombay and been a Mumbaiker throughout my life, in spirit now, of course. In Mumbai, I think the good part was I had very good experiences with two services companies, learned a lot. What I also got exposed to, and which probably was pivotal decision-making criteria in my career after that, was the exposure to business development activities. So in services firms, they do look out for people who are not just very strong technologists, but people who understand the business and who understand the problem statement. So when you're responding to RFPs, you can take it from requirements to building solutions. This is the time that I realized that while I enjoyed working for a service company, the best leverage of my talent would be in a product company where I could actually work between the business, the customer, and technology. That led me to Hyderabad and ADP. Those days, though, when I joined, I actually joined the investment banking division. Fintech's been close to my heart forever. Obviously, the technology was fab. That's where ADP came in. And I would attribute a lot of my career success to ADP. It's been an immense schooling ground. They never left me to get bored. There was always a new challenge, a new opportunity every 1.5, 2 years. Which shook me out of my comfort zone. I had to either learn a new technology, and I was open for anything, right? So I wasn't very fixated on the technology that I wanted to work on, or the domain, or people, which actually led me to more opportunities. So I even went and raised my hand for a mainframe reverse engineering, re-engineering project, right? Because I thought that was the best way to learn the domain. So, you know, 12 years, or I would say 17 years, was a pretty great experience, great learning ground. Of course, I think some of the hardships have also been because at that point in time, like you mentioned, literally newly wedded girl who joined ADP. And while there was this focus on making it in your new firm that you have joined, it was also about balancing it with your newly changed status. Fortunately for me, I think my husband Aladri and myself, we are both very similar in terms of what we want to do, professional, personal, likes, dislikes. Our styles are fairly similar. So I think that was pretty smooth. We've been there to support each other in our careers, been there to motivate, encourage, and just be there for each other during the lows. Yes, and then kids happened. I think when the kids were around young, age, I would say probably 8 and 11. It was a time where I felt I had done everything that ADP could offer me. On an impulse, applied to ISB, got selected, went in for a very rigorous MBA program, which was another transformative experience for me. Just opened out my horizons of thinking, which led me to definitely step up and take on larger roles and make, I would say, a lot of bold decisions on how I want to shape my career. So husband, parents, kids, my teams, my leaders, they all chimed in to float certain tasks from my plate so I could do my ISB. And I have a deep sense of gratitude for all of these people who have helped make me successful.
Snigdha's journey is one of show and don't tell, where she shows us how to conquer our fear of change and embrace it. She reminds us that taking calculated risks is what separates the truly successful from those who simply do well. Remembering great change can't happen without stepping outside your comfort zone. Which brings us to our next guest, Oindrila Majumdar. Oindrila is the Executive Vice President and CEO of TIAA Global Capability Center. TIAA manages a staggering $1.2 trillion in retirement assets for over 5 million customers. With over 25 years under her belt, Oindrila has been juggling multiple roles with ease. But what really sets her apart is her unwavering commitment to diversity and inclusion. She is a woman on a mission and she's taking no prisoners. Oindrila's story is one of perseverance and strategic risk-taking. She's not just built deep expertise in financial services, but has done so by taking micro risks. These calculated risks have created multiple inflection points, propelling her career trajectory upwards. Let's dive into Oindrila's journey and hear how she's made it happen.
You mentioned about the 25 years in the industry. Well, that's 25 and counting. It's nearly 30 now. Every time I look at it, that number goes up. Well, back in the day, I think banking represented financial services in India more than anything else. And if you were not going to be a doctor or an engineer, which I wasn't going to be, then banking was the next cool thing. It was considered very knowledge-oriented, highly respected, and that's how the aspiration started. And one day I found myself in banking. After having spent the first 10 years with my first employer, which was a bank, I had to take off for a year for personal reasons. And then when I went back to the industry, I didn't find anything that was interesting, and definitely not locally where I'm from, in Calcutta. And at that point of time, I was offered a role with Fidelity in their offshore offices, which were getting set up, and that was in Bangalore. So I decided to take that. It was a sort of a jump in the dark, but the opportunity of doing something completely different and utilizing some of the things that I'd learned in banking excited me, huge learning. Over a period of time, I did want to go back to banking. So this time, when I made the change to Fidelity, I did go back to banking, but stayed in the same offshore industry. That's how I went to Virgin. And I loved the 10 years there, 5 years on the investment banking side, 5 years on the asset management side. If you look at this, over the last 30 years, I have been in financial services, but I've been in consumer banking, I've been in investment banking, asset management, U.S. retirement, wealth management. So I thrive in a situation which brings new learning, change. Of course, there is also a lot of pain that comes with it, because every time you change, you have to roll up your sleeves and learn. Unlearn and learn. But it's been a fabulous journey.
Mark Zuckerberg once said, "In a rapidly changing world, the only guaranteed failures are those who don't take risks." But taking the leap of faith into the unknown is difficult, to say the least. Many people prefer stability over risk and chaos, but sometimes that's where the opportunity lies. Let's hear from Shalini and Oindrila about how their life began at the end of their comfort zones.
I realized that I do not want to be a frog in the well. and let me explore. So not that I had a very specific plan of action. I wanted to look at an adjacent sector, something that expands my horizon beyond my particular domain, but at least still continuing to have relevance of what I bring in as experience to the table, right? So that's why SaaS. And what drew me towards PlanVee was probably a couple of things. One is the opportunity to build a lot of things from scratch. That's not for the faint-hearted, but I did not want to go into a very established setting. So I said, okay, let me get my hands dirty and start building things up from day zero, number one. Number two was size of PlanVee as an organization and the opportunity that's out there, which means the impact that I could as a person have. I think that felt really immense. That felt good to be part of in that cycle, right?
The other thing I would say is we shy away from making choices that take us out of our comfort zone. I think we have to be fearless. Somebody once told me, a very senior woman leader that I looked up to, and she was a cancer survivor. And she said, you know, Indrala, there's no time. Be fearless with your choices. Be informed and be fearless. So I try to follow that.
The themes emerging from these conversations are consistent. A ship is safe in the harbor, but that is not what ships are for. Leaders need to cut their safety net to truly arrive at their potential. Now switching gears a bit. Ever feel like your job is basically you? Turns out you're not alone. A Forbes article dives into the tendency to over-identify with our careers. But here's the good news. Our amazing guests today have cracked the code. They, of course, have made some mistakes along the way, but they have still gone on to build fulfilling lives that extend beyond the office grind. Let's hear their secrets.
I think what helped me was working on detaching myself, my identity from the identity of the product or service. And that has happened over a period of time. Today, before somebody gives me feedback about my product or service or something I could have done better, I will go and give that feedback, right? Because I am able to see my identity different than my work. You know, the right, timely, candid feedback given in the right way can actually drive better results and help that person evolve in a very trusted environment. So I think as leaders, Nitika, when we're giving feedback, I think it's our responsibility to ensure we understand, we build that trust, and then start giving the feedback.
Essentially, we should really spend less time in explaining ourselves, defending ourselves, making our work talk. Don't wait for anybody to do it. And you don't have to feel any sense of regret or feeling the sense of somewhat false modesty. Take your team along. Be their champion, be your champion for yourself. I think that always works, Nikita.
Instead of getting defensive or insecure about tying their identities to work, Snigdha and Shalini took an offensive approach. They emphasized separating self-worth from professional achievements. Now let's talk about a critical issue for women leaders, the clash between peak career years and major personal milestones like starting a family. There's often pressure to choose one or the other. For Shalini, this played out when she had a newborn at the height of her career. How did she juggle both roles? What unique challenges did she face? Let's dive into Shalini's experiences for some valuable insights.
I think Indra Nui said that, right? That our biological clock and our career clock are always in conflict. Because as you're growing in career, that's exactly when life is happening. You're either getting into relationships, you're looking at a family way, you have aging parents, or you have conflicting priorities. I think she said it so beautifully. It happens to all of us. Same thing happened to me. And back when I got into a married life, I moved back from Hyderabad to Bangalore, and there was no concept of work remote, work from home, etc. in organizations back then. I was so passionately involved with Broadridge, I did not want to leave. Even when I came back to Bangalore, almost like I think 6-7 years, I continued working remotely, which was one of the hardest times in my working life as well as my home life, because newly married, it was a real conflict happening. My work front was getting some amazing opportunities. At the same time, back home, I was trying to set up a new life. I had no idea how to do both. I think I fumbled along, but what I did was wherever I got support, I grabbed at it. Now I think the situation is much different. We are, as a system, there is a lot more understanding and acceptability to some of these conflicting priorities. I have a son, and till the day I was about to get into delivery labor room, I was still finishing up my emails, and it was like the last minute. I was still doing everything before I pack up and go to the hospital. And we had 3 months maternity leave at that point, and 91st day I was back, right? So was it easy? Not at all. It was hard for people to understand back home as to why is this person crazy enough to leave an infant. And of course, I was still working from home at that point. But I think what I learned is how important it is to build your trusted network within workplace, not just your boss, your reporting manager or your team, etc. Today, of course, after COVID, I think situation has completely changed. But back then, if you're remote, you're out of sight, out of mind. You are always doing 150% just to show that you're present, irrespective of the leadership positions you were in. I was at that point probably already an associate vice president, I think. Didn't matter. Designation didn't matter. You were always fending off the questions that are told, said and unsaid. And half the times you're overthinking about those questions. Today, if I were to go back and do that, I would ignore a lot of them and just move ahead. I did not have that wisdom back then. So I think that's something which I had to overcome and had to build a thick skin.
Whether you're a working parent or not, Shalini's story offers a perspective we could all learn from as we strive for more supportive workplace cultures. Balancing career and family is no easy feat. It takes a village. But the key, as Shalini emphasizes, is not being afraid to ask for help when you need it.
Absolutely, Nikita. I don't think any of us can do this alone. But the sources of support come from very unlikely places. What I realized over time is how do you look forward to them, be open to them. I've been very fortunate and privileged that way. I've had some pretty uncomfortable times. But at the same time, the most unlikeliest people would stand up and support. And I was ready to take it. That's the only credit I can give to myself. I think that's very important. Sometimes, for some reason, even seeking support becomes a hard thing for us. We should not do that. I think each of us deserve to ask for help. There are times when I have failed miserably because I have not asked for help. So if I have one reflection, that is one.
What I've personally learned from my own experiences and these conversations is that asking for help isn't a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. That's what these remarkable women overcame and learned. Their journeys to the top were far from easy. The glass ceiling, very real. And being the sole woman in the room was a constant challenge. Let's hear directly from them how they navigated this obstacle course.
When I started my career, I was almost, and for the better part of my career, I've been the only woman in the room. We were talking about women in technology. There was a question of women in workplace before that. There just weren't enough of us. That's changed now, which is great. That women in the workplace are more commonplace than they used to be. There's not enough of us. There has to be far more, but it's much better now. I've had situations where I've faced conscious bias against my abilities just due to my gender. Comments, indications that one is making progress because of the gender. Frankly, I have been fearless about calling that out. It's important to call that out to the right people who are supportive, who understand the business justification of diversity in the workplace, and ensure that the feedback goes to that person. Not necessarily just for being transparent about the situation, but for the firm, it's important that whoever thinks like this, the right context is set. The conscious bias bit of it, I think, has changed. It has reduced a great deal over the last 20 years. But there are unconscious bias, which we train people for, we make them aware. But it is still important to be fearless and say, this is not right. That would be my advice.
Evolution of time for sure. I think the world is much kinder and evolved to understand the potential of what women bring about. But was I the only woman? Yes. And I think back today, did that cause roadblocks? I believe so. And it's important to acknowledge that, because at that point, maybe I did not have the wisdom to understand what are my roadblocks and am I always punching above my weight just to stay in the same category? I feel that now when I think about it, you're always on a more than 150% just to show that you're 100%. Whether we like it or not, you're justifying. That takes a beating to the confidence, but more importantly, you're trying to work on this perception management half your time when you should be focusing on the work and, you know, really honing your craft. I have felt a lot of that during the journey. I hope I'm doing my bit now as I have a lot more influence in my organization and position. I'm hoping that I'm making it easier for the rest. But yes, this has certainly been there.
The common thread woven through Oindrila, Snigdha and Shalini's reflections is that rather than seeing biases as hurdles, they viewed being the only woman in the room as a chance to stand out, overcome doubts and blaze new trails. Their stories echo those of countless inspiring women in the industry who turned perceived weaknesses into strengths through sheer grit, determination and an opportunity mindset. Oindrila, Snigdha and Shalini's journeys are truly aspirational examples of making the most of any situation.
I think I was lucky to have people who patted on my back for an opportunity that was way beyond what I believed. For example, I remember when we had a lot of leadership changes in ADP for the global product and technology head, I was leading a 350, 400 member team. And when this role opened up, which was like at that point in time a 1500, 1600 member team, I couldn't raise my hand. I wanted to, but I had zero confidence. And that was the time I remember Niladri telling me, "Are you crazy? Why wouldn't you?" Because it was a global acknowledgement that I should go for that role. So if I had raised my hand, I would have got it. But I think there, the self-doubt, the lack of confidence, the lack of assertiveness, because some of them would have been my ex-peers who would have been reporting into me. Will I be able to manage them? Those questions crept into my mind. Later, of course, I did opt in for that role and I was successful in that role and I pleasantly surprised myself. But I think I would have been happy if I was like that earlier. But again, our experiences teach us.
Somewhere I was fighting the battle with myself, saying that I had to create confidence in myself, nobody else would. I had some amazing mentors, but at the end of the day, the struggle was within me. And I did not like the version of me trying to stay in the back just because of the feeling that I may not be able to do it. I think that's what I wanted to fight. Even today, that's what I kind of fight. So I always end up overcompensating for it by putting my hand up for any new thing that comes up. If you talk to anybody back in Broadridge, they would say, if they remember me enough, that I was the guinea pig for many things. Not that anybody asked me, I would actually put my hand up. Was it good? Was it bad? I've had both outcomes, but I think that's what shaped me. Because if I didn't do that for myself, I could never expect somebody else to do it for me. And for me, more than coming to the front of it, it was the confidence I wanted for myself.
All right, time for my favorite part, the rapid fire round. In true woman in the mirror fashion, I had them peer into the looking glass and share the advice they give their younger selves gazing back, their current self, and even get a glimpse of what wisdom they'd impart to their future wiser selves down the line. The insights they mirror are pure gold. What is the one piece of advice you would give your 20-year-old self?
Don't beat yourself up for every small thing. I really did that. I think I was much more harder on myself than anybody in the world.
Brush yourself down, stay the course, because tomorrow is another day.
Since I just got married and I think I put in a lot of precious hours into my work, I think looking back, I would say chill and enjoy your marriage, enjoy the new phase in your life.
What advice do you give yourself today?
This is going to get even more interesting, so still stay the course.
My current self, I think, be more active networking, because that's something I realized I stopped doing.
Go slow to go fast.
10 years hence, as you look into the mirror, what do you think you'll tell yourself?
Impossible is nothing.
Treasure every moment and live in the moment.
Hopefully a lot more contentment in the years ahead and quality time with my family. And more time for myself and my music.
What are the three micro habits that you have inculcated as a leader?
First would be a constantly refreshed to-do list. The second would be giving myself little pockets of time to think, to plan, to prepare. And the third thing would be instant feedback.
At an individual level, sustaining my own passion for learning and experimentation. But then I think, creating that in the environment and ecosystem. So people feel they're working for themselves and they're not working for the bosses or the organization, right? So I think lighting that fire in them to learn, to experiment, and just feel the satisfaction of, surprising themselves. The third one is investing in talent. I think that's something I believe in, paying it forward. So I think those are three things that I'm extremely focused on.
So Sharon, when I keep telling everybody connect the dots, the questions I'll ask is how?
I'm sure there is no formula, but what I have learned is that connect the dots is where business became a North Star when it comes to working life, right? As long as you're thinking what is the business impact of what you're doing, naturally the dots got connected, irrespective of the job role that I held. It was very easy. So knowing that North Star makes a huge impact. And tomorrow, if it's about your work life in a much bigger context, think of your societal impact, environmental impact, whatever impact that you want to create, and that becomes a North Star, keep connecting dots back there. And you will build the muscle of connecting the dots by doing that again and again. Every new role you take on again, go back to your roots, connect the dots. That's been my playbook all the time.
What would be the one word you use to describe your leadership style?
Authentic. I think bringing me as I am, unfiltered, but of course being sensitive to people's emotions. I think that's how I like to see myself and I strive to be that.
In just a few short minutes, Oindrila, Snigdha and Shalini fired off such profound wisdom and takeaways for all of us. From reminders to stay resilient through life's twists and turns, to the importance of leading with authenticity and nurturing talent. Their insights were like a mirror reflecting every woman's journey out there. As the writer Mandy Hale said, it's an audacious way to live, indeed, standing with a door to your heart and life wide open. But isn't that the real fairy tale? A brave, bold, well-lived life? Our guests today embodied that spirit, sharing their stories with incredible honesty and bravery. Their candor is a powerful reminder that with courage, perseverance, and a little support, no dream or goal is truly out of reach for any of us. As we bring this exciting episode to a close, a thank you to our guests for inspiring us all. Stay tuned for more episodes of Woman in the Mirror, where we'll bring you other exceptional leaders who shattered the glass ceiling and left a lasting impact. Until next time, take their words of wisdom to heart, embrace the journey, lead authentically, and live life brave, bold, and queen size.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Business Resilience Series. Stay tuned for more such interesting episodes. You can listen to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. To know more about Zinnov, visit our website, www.zinnov.com, or drop us a note at info@zinnov.com. Follow us on Twitter @Zinnov for regular updates on our content. Thank you again for listening to the Business Resilience series of the Zinnov Podcast.